This podcast is part of a series called Elevate My Pharmacy Career. I'm Ella Shearing, an intern pharmacist representative working with the Pharmacy Careers Group. This encompasses both Locumate, an online service connecting locums to pharmacies, and Jobs in Pharmacy, which is a digital marketplace connecting you to careers in pharmacy. In this Elevate My Pharmacy Career series, we get a chance to deep dive into the careers of trailblazers within the pharmacy industry. Using our student team, we explore the expansive career opportunities in the pharmacy industry by focusing on new innovation, technology, and the people driving it. Each episode, we will bring on a new guest speaker who has been making a real impact within this community. So let's introduce today's guest. She is the 2021 New South Wales Pharmacist of the Year, a current practicing pharmacist, researcher, lecturer, and entrepreneur, and the founder of Pharm Online, which is a vital telehealth service. Today's guest is none other than Anna Barwick. Anna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Ella. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, we're so grateful for you being able to take your time to come on today. So Anna, we've seen a lot of you on social media and within the pharmacy space doing lots of amazing and innovative work. Can you give the audience a bit of a rundown from your background and what got you into pharmacy?
Sure. So I started considering pharmacy when I was in high school. So I went through a central school out in Peak Hill, out in central west New South Wales, and was always very interested in science, but also giving back. I have a very strong family connection with volunteering and contributing to the community, and I wanted to have something that would incorporate that in my future career as well. So pharmacy seemed like a really good idea. I kind of looked at, you know, perhaps becoming a doctor or a physiotherapist, and pharmacy seemed to be a profession that was really innovative, kind of supported my desire for lifelong learning. And I just tried to learn a little bit more about it, and then actually started working at a community pharmacy in a local town close to where I grew up. And then got accepted into pharmacy at Charles Sturt University at Orange. So we were the first cohort that went through as Charles Sturt University graduates. In the past, it had been a University of Sydney rural school of pharmacy, and loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was a fantastic opportunity to learn and meet new people. And it's actually where I met my husband, who is also a pharmacist. And so with that very first job in pharmacy I got, I actually ended up doing cadetship there in the community pharmacy and worked there all the way through my undergraduate degree, as well as an intern and then as a pharmacist as well. So after that, my partner and I were then looking at opportunities where we could have a couple of pharmacists in a town, and we always knew we'd go rural. We knew that without a doubt, because we're both rural kids and still love, the opportunities and the lifestyle that provides. So we actually shifted north and landed at a little place called Werris Creek, which is just on the outskirts of Tamworth. So I actually started working at the hospital there as a clinical pharmacist for about a year. And then my husband then had the opportunity to become a partner and then an owner in King's Pharmacy in Walker, which is just up the road a little bit further and a little bit higher and much colder than Tamworth. So it's kind of between Armidale and Tamworth. And at that point, it was slightly shorter for me to drive to Armidale than Tamworth. So I actually switched my role from Tamworth Hospital to Armidale Hospital. And at that point, I also had an opportunity to do the placement position at the university. So it was just starting out at that time at the University of New England. The program, I think, was a couple of years in at that stage, and they needed someone to help with their placements. And I already had quite a few connections within the pharmacy profession at that stage, so it was a really good fit. And from there, I've just kind of increased my academic roles. And so now I predominantly work there as an academic with some research capabilities. And then have obviously started Pharm Online as a bit of a side hustle or a passion project, whatever you want to call it. And it's definitely a really good focus for me and something that really incorporates all of my loves all in the one place. So, that's me.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So with Pharm Online, what was the main motivation and driver behind that then?
Yeah, again, I think just my rural background. So like you, Ella, when you're in a rural area, you see some of the limitations and some of the the health discrepancies that can happen. And that kind of hit home for me when I was in high school, because my grandmother actually passed away from undiagnosed heart disease. So she passed away in her sleep. We had no idea why she passed. And obviously when they went and checked all of that out, it was quite clear that she had cardiomyopathy and another number of other, kind of symptoms and conditions that were contributing to that. And I thought, really, that should have been picked up. And the more I learn about pharmacy, the more I realized we could have actually had, or pharmacists could have had a really big impact there about, you know, helping with her medications and identifying some of the signs and symptoms she was actually presenting with. So yeah, I just went, right, this needs to not happen to other families, and I want to be able to help that to not occur. And so I think that kind of first made me love pharmacy in general, but really made me recognize that there was probably some limitations in rural healthcare that needed to be closed. And I think I kind of considered the idea of trying to expand the reach of pharmacists, even though that we're often a really accessible profession. We can have limitations with opening hours, and particularly in rural communities, a lot of pharmacies might only be open from 9 to 5 and have a lunch break and may not be open across the weekend or only open for limited hours. So I thought it's got to be something better than that. And I think really the precipitation of the idea of Farm Online came about when I had my first child. So I was breastfeeding her. It was about 3 a.m. and I looked down and she had a rash, and I thought, oh my goodness, what's this rash? And obviously the first thing that any anxious first time mum does is jump onto Google and start to look and go on to Dr. Google and ask what on earth this is. And obviously some of the things that were coming up was that she has meningococcal disease, and you know, she's imminent, you know, imminent risk of death. And as a pharmacist, I could work through that and kind of go, okay, that's the least likely option. What else could it be? But I think people that don't have that health literacy or that training that we do as pharmacists can really easily get sucked into that and cause a lot of unnecessary anxiety. And so I thought, right, there's going to be a lot of other mums and a lot of other families that are going through this as well, and getting anxious about information they find online or that they're told from friends and family in good faith but may not necessarily be correct. And I thought, right, we can reach these people. So that's kind of where I first thought about it. And then I actually pitched the idea and concept of Farm Online right at the start of the pandemic. So the University of New England has like an innovation hub where they very much support entrepreneurs and they encourage people to come forward with their idea. So I pitched the idea of Farm Online, which is all about reducing that gap, making pharmacists more accessible, and allowing people to talk to pharmacists at home. So where it's really private, really secure, and where we can check someone's understanding of their medicines that they already have at home. So obviously that was accepted and appreciated, which was very nice, because I was very wary about that. I thought people that didn't have any pharmacy background wouldn't have any idea of what we do, but they really could see the benefit. And so they've helped to support me along the way as I've built up the business to be what it is today.
That's such a powerful story, and the personal connection that you actually have with Farm Online as well. I think that's so important. And really inspirational that you've been able to use those previous life lessons and find the problems and actually become find a solution for them. So I think that's really, really amazing. You mentioned that there is a lot of limitations to living regionally and remotely, and especially in healthcare, there's a lot of limitations. But in saying that, even with those challenges present, what do you believe are some of the benefits that you've gained from working in and growing up in those tight-knit regional communities like Peak Hill and Armidale and Tamworth?
Yeah, so many. I mean, I think a lot of it's underestimated. And obviously, I mean, my experience is I've grown up in those areas. So I think that helps a lot with feeling comfortable, particularly with the long distances. And, you know, I think as a rural person, you have to plan a lot more, you know, when you want to go to conferences, right? Professional conferences, there's more planning. There's often more flights you need to take, you know, and you know you need to travel, and you know you need to be conscious of the time you travel, because it might be, you know, peak kangaroo time. Right? And so you're very conscious of not driving when you might hit a kangaroo. The benefits, I think, are endless. Obviously, for me, raising a family, it means my children have, I think, a lot more opportunities than even, you know, people in metropolitan areas do, because I think They get to travel a lot more. They get to see a lot more of the country, but also when they're at home, they have a lot more space. They have opportunities to be kids and run around and ride horses and ride motorbikes. And, you know, they learn to drive so much earlier. I often feel that they're often really safe because they're getting that practice really early on. And I think just that connection with community is really strong. So what I notice when I go to the city is I'm very much a person who has a very expressive face. So I tend to smile at people automatically, right? It's just an automatic default.
Yeah. I go through.
And it's really interesting. In the city, people often just kind of, they don't look at you, or they're really focused. They know what they're doing and they're on their way, and they may not actually look at you or engage with you. But I find in rural communities, people are much more likely just to strike up a conversation just because you've looked and smiled at them. And I actually really enjoy that. I find that really lovely. And I often find country people in the city because they'll be the ones that look back and, you know, and chat to you, and I always love it when I do go to the city because I can always claim, you know, I'm from the country, can you give me some help? And people are always so lovely. I'm like, I'm lost, I don't understand this timetable, the bus timetable. So I think it's lovely, and I think it's just that groundedness and connection to land too, I think, is really important. I absolutely love being out in nature. I wouldn't say like I love to go on kind of bushwalks or anything like that, but I just love to be out on the ground, have my bare feet on the ground, be around animals, watching nature, watching, you know, plants grow. I love all of that. It's something that is really important to me, and I'm trying to encourage in my children as well. But yeah, so many advantages. And then obviously with pharmacy, again, that connection with your community is really strong. I find community pharmacies are sponsoring, you know, local sports teams. They're often playing, you know, the staff are often playing on those local sports teams. They get involved in childcare initiatives and strategies, you know, for education. I just love that. I think that's an amazing thing that is probably undervalued, and I think you see generations after time as well. So you'll start to see, you know, you'll be looking after grandparents, and then you'll see their children have their own children, and then you're looking after, you know, like you're looking after the little bubbies when they're coming in with conjunctivitis or, you know, slap cheek or whatever it is. You know, we have that real impact, and I think that's really lovely. So look, I think all of the benefits outweigh the negatives by a long way. As I said, you can adjust for some of those limitations, but I think in this day and age with internet connectivity and phone connectivity, you're not really, you know, isolated like we have been probably in the past. It does mean you can stay in contact with your family, and I'd really encourage all students to at least have a go at rural pharmacy, because I think there's so much there that you can learn from. And even if you don't actually stay in rural pharmacy, the skills and the knowledge that you get just from the exposure and experience means that you're really helpful as a pharmacist in the future. Because if you've got patients that, you know, they might be coming to your large metropolitan hospital, but you know they're traveling 4 hours, you know, west, and you know it's going to be hard for them to get their repeat medication, at least you're conscious of that, and you might have already come up with some strategies or seen strategies while you've been on placement or during work experience that can really help you to add value to that patient's experience.
I think that's a really, really good point, especially with encouraging students just to have an experience in working in rural areas. I think it's a real eye-opener.
Yes.
You mentioned community a lot. Surrounding yourself with supportive people. Mm-hmm. Was there a particular mentor that you had throughout your career? And if you did have a mentor, what are some tips that you could give to our students on finding someone that's going to be supportive and a beneficial mentor for them?
Absolutely. I think it's essential. And I think for me, I actually had mentors even in unofficial capacities when I was still at high school. They were not pharmacists, not even close. So one of my most favourite people and still a mentor to me was a maths teacher. She was a little bit older, and so she'd actually retired. And when my grandmother passed away, I had a lot to do with my nan, and losing her really lost that connection for me with particularly the older generation. And so my mum had actually teed up for me to have some contact with this math teacher, and it was a bit of an opportunity for me to do some tutoring to help because I was in year 11 and 12 by that stage. So it was good. But actually, we very rarely did any maths, right? So we actually just sat and chatted, and I love that. And she's still one of my biggest supporters. I still get phone calls and letters and little gifts in the mail. Like, she's the most beautiful person, and just checks in, you know, and that's just amazing. I think, so you can see I'm getting emotional. It really has an impact on you for a really long time. And then I think professionally throughout my life, I've identified pharmacists that I can see, like, I love what they do, like their skill set or the way they handle themselves, particularly in public, but also with patients. So I've had people that I've worked with that I still think are the best pharmacists I've ever seen. I've also had some formal mentoring done. So the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia has a formal mentoring program. So I was actually matched with Manya Angley. So some of your listeners may know who she is. If you don't, you need to, because she's an amazing person. So she's a South Australian pharmacist who's particularly interested around disability care and doing home medication reviews for a range of people. And yeah, she's just, her life experience has obviously definitely affected what, you know, her specialty is. And that just comes through in everything she does. She, again, a very amazing person. And whenever I talk to her, I'm like, oh my goodness, I want to be you in, you know, however many years time. But she's also very grounded and very, you know, reasonable. She's like, you know, family comes first, you know, and so we talk about that a lot as well. And I've also had, you know, supervisors. So I've got, you know, doing my PhD with some outstanding pharmacists and non-pharmacists that, again, really are influencing where I'm heading in the future and what my plans will be. So, yeah, I highly encourage you, but don't just go with a pharmacist. I think you can find other people in your local community, wherever you are, to just have people that check in with you or that you catch up with. And, you know, particularly if it's someone from the older generation, you know, you can take something around to them, you know, drop them in some cooking or, you know, help take their medications around or whatever it is. I think just building that connection, it just makes life much more enjoyable. And I think you get quite a lot of satisfaction out of being involved in some of those relationships. So yeah, highly encouraged. And as I said, you know, you'll have them for often a very long time, or even if it's a short time, they can have a really big influence on you as well. So I couldn't list the amount of people I think that have had an influence or that I feel are mentors, and they might not even know that they're my mentors, but they inspire me and encourage me by their actions. And that's a pretty amazing thing.
That is really amazing. I can hear how passionate you are when it comes to building a really supportive community.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really, so really important. Great. So you're doing a lot at the moment, Anna. Like you were mentioning before, you're starting Farm Online, getting that up and going. You're also lecturing as a pharmacist. You've got so much going on. How do you stay on top of it all?
The truth is, I probably don't. I think there are things that, you know, don't get done how I would like them to at times. And I think that's okay as well. Obviously, you know, you have to work with integrity and be able to, you know, keep promises that you make and those types of things. But I think, again, you know, that community and that communication is really important. So if you've built up strong relationships with people and things aren't done exactly when they're meant to, I think people are very forgiving, which is very nice. So I'm actually working on a manuscript at the moment with some amazing pharmacists. And I was meant to do my part on it. And I was like, I'm really sorry, I haven't got to it. And everyone was really lovely. And I did, you know, I did get it done, but it was probably a few days after it probably should have been done. And I think that helps a lot. But I also get help, you know, where I can as well. Like, I understand that I am not skilled in every area. I love being able to kind of upskill myself, but I understand I'm not the person to do everything. So I pay people to do certain parts in my business. So things like website maintenance, SEO stuff, I don't care. I'm a clinician. I want to help people. So that to me is the time I need to make and to free me up for. And then, you know, at home, I actually have a cleaner that comes in once a week, and that frees me up from doing some of the home duties that I would normally do and probably get quite resentful about. So I think it's kind of recognizing the things that you enjoy and doing that, recognizing areas where you can upskill and taking the time to do that, but also recognizing you can outsource, and that's okay. And it's that's not a failure, but you do need help at times. And I think the other thing that's often underestimated is that ability to ask for help. So if you do, you know, you need some help or you would like some assistance, I think most people are really happy to help and to offer that where you can. You've just got to ask. And I mean, the worst outcome is a no, and that's okay as well. But I think, yeah, feeling comfortable and confident to be able to ask for help, know where you need help and reflect on that as a person, I think is really important as well. And yeah, obviously having a really good family structure around you is great as well. So I've got a husband pharmacist who understands particularly some of the challenges that come with pharmacy practice. And my kids are getting a little bit older now, so it's a little bit easier to kind of juggle things. So yeah, you just keep adapting and making adjustments. And yeah, as I said, kind of asking for help when you need to.
That's such an important skill, being able to know when you're at capacity and then find someone to, or find people who can help you and help fill in those gaps. I think that's a really important skill.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, and one that you'll build with practice. You get more confident about it over time. It can feel really awkward at the start. And I know I was like that, particularly as a young pharmacist. I was like, no, I need to prove myself. I need to do everything on my own. But actually, I probably wasn't then as efficient or as effective then as a pharmacist, because I was too busy trying to catch up and learn everything when I could have had other people assisting me and just focusing on my strengths.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Especially as a woman, I think there's a lot of expectation to be able to do all of these things at once.
Yes, that's right. And I know that there's a good quote out there that says, you know, you can have everything but not at the same time. But I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you can do a lot at the same time. It's just you've got to align it really well. So, you know, for me, doing a PhD is on telehealth and is actually about, you know, and based in Pharm Online itself. So I'm leveraging what I'm doing to actually give me value in several areas that I'm working on. So I'm working on and in my business, but I'm also doing some research on that service or that model of care. So again, that I can upskill myself for students. So I teach, you know, pharmacy, medicine and nursing students. So being able to kind of help in that multidisciplinary environment and demonstrate evidence-based practice is obviously really important.
That's so important. Yeah. You mentioned about upskilling. So when students come into pharmacy, they feel like they're coming out of their pharmacy degree with a really narrow set of skills and way of working. What other transferable skills have you taken out of pharmacy and your pharmacy degree and able to put that into other different areas of your life and your career?
Oh, so much. I think we underestimate that really a lot, right? So you'll come out with really good technical skills, okay? So you'll know, you know, drug interactions and side effects and, you know, what kind of choice to use in particular situations. But what you also come out with are things like organizational skills and communication skills and the ability to influence behavior change. I think all of that, you can use that in any area of anything at any time. So what I've noticed is that, yeah, my skill set can be used in consultancy in other areas of healthcare. It also means that I can, you know, do more of my volunteer work. So I was actually a treasurer for a local event in my local community. Now, I don't really like numbers. It's not really a strength of mine, but I did that to push myself out of my comfort zone. And I actually really enjoyed it. So again, you know, building more skills that you may not see so much of in pharmacy is a good way to do that as well. But look, I think it's endless. And I think what we tend to do in pharmacy is put ourselves in boxes and say that we can only work in community or hospital industry. And I just think that's rubbish, right? I just think we can work anywhere and everywhere. And particularly in the age of, you know, technology and health tech kind of exploding, I've seen pharmacists go into areas that I'm now working with in Pharm Online. So, you know, one of the platforms that we use for our consultations actually has a pharmacist who is helping set up some of the tech side. So just because they've used tech in their background as a pharmacist, that has been transferable into this new entrepreneurial role within a you know, a startup and even some global businesses. So, I just think that's really exciting. And I think pharmacy students shouldn't feel like they're going just to be, you know, in this one track kind of profession for the rest of their lives. I think it's that capacity to look for opportunities and apply for jobs, even if they're not as a pharmacist, you can still have a really big influence in different areas of business. And it doesn't even have to be healthcare. It can even be outside that. But obviously, yeah, having the technical skill set that we have, it's often very highly valued in particular industries that are currently lacking that. And I think sometimes as pharmacists, we get forgotten. So you often see jobs that are posted for nurses or for GPs. And again, I think it's worthwhile questioning, you know, could a pharmacist do this job? And in many cases, they can, right? So we have those technical skills that can be used across different professions. Obviously that we've still got to adhere to some of the legislation requirements and our own scopes of practice, but the capability to shift and adapt and move into different positions is, I think, endless.
That versatility is endless, isn't it?
Absolutely. And yes, that's exciting, right? So it means that you don't have to be tied down to a particular area. You can do whatever you want.
That's a really important message, yes. Yeah. Anna, I've just finished reading the Rural Businesswoman book, which you contributed to, a chapter on how to bootstrap your business.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, what else do you think it takes to run a business other than, of course, the money? And did you know what you were doing when you started Farm Online?
No, and I still don't. I feel like I'm just making it up as I go. But to be honest, I think most people in life are, right? So don't, it can feel really uncomfortable. But the more I talk to particularly other entrepreneurs, even people that are not pharmacists, that are outside of our industry, they're very much saying the same thing, right? So they might, again, have some technical skills that they bring in, but often if they're building something that is completely new, they're literally testing and measuring as they go and figuring out what's working and what's not. So, managing money is an important part. And what I've had to learn very much about is, you know, how do we make a business that is financially viable, but also interesting for kind of future investment as well, because obviously what we're doing at Farm Online is unusual and breaking the mold when it comes to pharmacy, because we are actually having people pay for our advice rather than products, which has traditionally been the way that pharmacy is run. And I've always felt that that is not the right way or the right focus we should have. I think our value is in the education and the information and the advocacy we provide rather than just the products.
Just some of the, what it takes to run a business, like more further than just the monetary component. And did you go in with a plan? Was it more of a community effort? Did you use a lot of resources from the community? How does someone even go into something like that? It's such a big venture.
It is. And what I have found is being involved with this entrepreneurial group has really helped, because they often recognise some of the issues that you're likely to come up against and often provide some upskilling in that area. So I've been involved with the UNE Smart Region Incubator now for the last few years, and they offer, you know, opportunities to speak to experts. So it might be a finance expert, or it might be a marketing expert, or it might be, you know, a whole range of things. It might be a professional coach. And I think I've been able to take those opportunities as they've arisen. And I think that's a really important point, is that when opportunities come up, try and identify how they might help you in your future career. They might not be necessary right now, but if you learn something now, it might mean that you're going to be a lot more efficient when it comes to actually needing that skill or that that information in the future. So, and I know they exist right around the country, right? So try and find one that's local to you, that seems to have similar values or seems to have similar entrepreneurs to you, because they'll be able to help you so much. So again, within the Smart Region Incubator, I've got other colleagues that are in health tech, and so they're often a lot further down the track of their progression of their business. So being able to ask them questions and ask for contacts and help. So I've got a colleague who is working in the online birthing space. So she's actually a midwife and has online training for people that need that and might be isolated and need some assistance when they're planning on giving birth. So she's made connections with private health insurance companies. So I actually emailed her the other day saying, who should I contact about potentially, you know, offering a service through a private health insurance company, for example. So that's really cool. And I've never felt like I'm just doing it on my own. I don't think I would have progressed as far as I had without those contacts. But there are things, there are books, there are podcasts that you can listen to. There are people you can find on LinkedIn that will just, again, you can reach out to them and ask or read through information, and you'll pick out those little gems that will be relevant to you and that you can utilize in your future professional life as well. So it feels all a bit all over the place, and I feel like that's okay, and that's probably part of the entrepreneurial journey. It feels really uncomfortable. Often feels like you don't know what you're doing. You often take a few steps forward and then you get a few steps back before you can keep going. That's normal. It's okay. Failure is normal. I think I have, you know, knockbacks and, you know, things that go wrong probably every single day, but it's that getting back up, having another go, trying a different way and getting a different outcome that makes a really big difference. And I think, yeah, having some, you know, time for yourself with for your mental health as well is really important, because I think you can get caught up in the grind and the hustle, and I think that's not good. And particularly when you're doing a startup, you can feel like that's all you do is you just work, work, work. But you have to take time, you know, to help with your physical health, with your mental health, connecting back with family and friends. All of that then makes you actually more efficient in your business anyway. So, and obviously avoids things like burnout and stress and anxiety, which we do not need more of as pharmacists. We have enough. So, yeah, I think that's a really important component as well.
I'm hearing resilience is something that's really important to you when it comes to building your own company and business.
That's right. And I think just building strategies that you know work for you is really important. So people talk about building resilience and doing this and that. And I think people get a bit negative about it because sometimes things don't work for them, but you've got to find what works for you and then keep practicing that, and you get better and more efficient as well as you go.
Do you have any strategies to cope for when things don't go the way that you plan them to?
Yeah, as I said, it feels like it happens every day. So I think I'm almost a bit tolerant of it. Like I'm kind of like, oh, well, another thing that didn't work. That's okay. Which is probably good. And see, I can laugh about it, right? Because I'm kind of like, okay, it didn't work. And that's all right. So I think for me, when I get a knockback that I was really hoping to get, I'll often take a little bit of time away. So I might go and do, you know, go for a walk, get out in nature, get my feet on the ground, try and be a bit more mindful of what's happening. And I often find then at that time, even though what I'm concentrating on is kind of maybe some physical movement of my body, my mind is going and kind of going and starting to work through things, even without me consciously thinking of it. And often by the time I get back, you know, to my desk, I've come up with a new way of kind of figuring this out or changing it or going, right, well, that didn't work. So this is the next option. This is plan B, C, right down to plan Z. Because it's going to happen. It's, you know, things are not going to go right. And I think it's not important not to dwell on it. Absolutely recognize it and go, okay, that was crappy. I didn't like that. I don't want that to happen again. And so, you know, like I was talking about before, knockbacks, right? So I'll apply for pitch competitions that might have some money attached for it that I'd like to reinvest in the business. So I got a knockback yesterday to say, unfortunately, you weren't selected. I could go, oh, well, that's really crappy. But actually, you know, or I go, oh, well, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to apply there again. You know, you can get quite angry about it. But what I do is go, thank you very much. Could you please let me know what I can do to improve my chances the next time I apply? So I actually actively try and find out what I can do or how I can improve my chances in the future. I don't just let it lie. I actually try and find out, you know, how to do that. And I'm very, very comfortable with constructive criticism. So if someone comes back and goes, Anna, you didn't do that at all, or that wasn't right, or you need to work on that, I'm like, yep, totally can see that. All right, this is what I'm going to do next time. So I think I kind of prepare, you know, for future opportunities, and I'd encourage pharmacy students to do that as well. So even at university level, right? So I'm a lecturer. I give feedback to students, and a lot of students just accept it. They never question it. They never ask anymore. They never ask for clarification. And then the next time they do a similar assessment, they often don't necessarily improve. And it's not because they haven't read the feedback or thought about the feedback. They often maybe just need a little bit more, or they need time to process that. So I'd encourage you to reach out to your lecturers, or if you're being supervised by a preceptor, ask, you know, what went wrong there? Well, how can I do this again? And it's not to, it's not to be, annoying or I don't think people see it that way, particularly as a lecturer. When someone, a student comes to me and asks for more information, I'm like, this is amazing. This student's going to do well because they're assertive enough, because they're self-aware enough to actually reach out and get more information to give them a better chance in the future. And I think that's so true and can be utilized in business, in life in general. It's actually a really good skill and way of coping with things, just to gain some more understanding and more insight that can then help equip you to be better in the future.
I think that's really great that you've given that perspective on as a lecturer and a tutor, because sometimes as students it is a bit intimidating going up to your lecturer or the exam marker and asking for a bit of feedback.
Yeah, so, don't be at all. Yeah. We are just average humans, right? There's nothing special about us. I don't know. Yeah. And look, I know I was like that too as an undergraduate student, and always felt a bit kind of worried. But yeah, I was lucky again. I was in a situation where I felt that I could reach out to my lecturers, and I did that regularly. And as I said, yeah, don't be intimidated. As I said, most lecturers love it. They're like, oh, wow, this student is interested, because often we see you guys going to sleep in lectures, right? So we're kind of like, are you, is there anything, are you taking this in at all? So it's lovely when we can see that a student has tried to take on information. Maybe they haven't quite got it yet, but we can help them with strategies to try and, you know, gain that knowledge, gain that skill. Don't ever feel afraid of doing that. And if, you know, if you do have your lecturer that is really intimidating like that, you know, maybe it's reaching out in different ways. So maybe it's not initially asking for feedback, but maybe just saying, you know, how you go, you know, it might just be reaching out. And again, that's really nice. As humans, we like that, right? When people check in with us, that's true of the most intimidating lecturer that has ever lived. So don't ever feel worried about that. I think you'll find most of the time it's highly, highly positive when you do so.
That's really great, because we do have a lot of students that do listen to the podcast and that do connect with pharmacy careers. So we do have a lot of students who are listening to the podcast, a lot of people who are really early on in their pharmacy career. Reflecting back on your time as an undergrad student, what is something that you wish, or what do you wish you could tell your younger self? Sitting in that undergrad lecture theatre, like many of our other pharmacy students are, and what are some things that you regret or wish you got more involved in?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I'd probably say don't rush. Don't try and do everything all at once. I still need to say that to myself now. I feel like I need to do everything right now. And that's not always true, right? So, you know, expertise and skills build up over time. And I think that's important for students to know. The other thing I would say is absolutely get involved in pharmacy groups at your local institution. So, you know, if there's the Pharmacy Student Association, get involved, put your hand up for some of those major positions, you know, the treasurer or the secretary or the president. It's amazing. You know, you'll get lots of support. It's not a really cumbersome job, but I think the connections you get from that are amazing. Connecting with a profession early is really important too. So going to conferences, introducing yourself to the big names in pharmacy. Again, do not be afraid to do that. Most of them absolutely love it and lap it up. I know a lot of pharmacy students would know John Bell. He's one of those guys you can go up and have a chat to about Australian rugby. It was one of the things I did as a student. And I remember him looking at me going, do you know about rugby? And I'm like, yeah. So, there's things that you can connect with, you know, that are outside of pharmacy that do kind of help to start to build those relationships. And then you're remembered, right? Because I'll go, oh, I remember Ella. She came up to me at, you know, the conference and, you know, she was really lovely. And again, you know, following up with an email or, you know, having a business card or linking up on LinkedIn, all of those things are amazing for kind of maintaining those connections and building on them. Because I find pharmacy is a very small world and, you know, a few people, you start to get connected in whole other areas and it brings up opportunities. So that's what's happened with Farm Online. So the fact that I have been involved with the PSA as a branch member, so that was a voluntary position, but I was elected to that position by the profession, which is really cool. But though, like, being involved in that has linked me with lots of other people, and we now have actual business opportunities through Farm Online because of my connections to the PSA. So we're actually contracting in for some of the services that they offer, which is amazing and would not have happened without me putting myself out there, having a go, having a crack, even as a young pharmacist. So absolutely do that. I'd also encourage students to find an area they really love and focus in on that. Like, we need more specialist pharmacists. So if you love wound care, become the wound care pharmacist of Australia. That's what, you know, you can aim to do that, right? So at the moment, I'm probably known as the telehealth pharmacist, because even though there are other pharmacists kind of working this space, what Farm Online is the first pharmacist-led one. So people are going to know that, right? And then there are other people. So Debbie Rigby is the HMR pharmacist, right? Because that's just an area that people know her for. So pick an area. And, I mean, this can adapt over time. So obviously telehealth wasn't something I started out as. I have always been really interested in women's health generally, and so a lot of my research is in that space, and always very interested in education and supporting both students and patients. So, but all of that's kind of come in and been rolled up now in Farm Online. So I can do all of that within what I've actually created. So, yeah, don't be afraid to specialize and specialize early, but you have to be adaptable. So if things don't work out, don't be afraid to kind of change track or use your skills in other ways. And the other thing I always say to students is you're either winning or you're learning. So if you don't have a win today, you've learnt from it, which will make you more likely to win the next time. And a win for you might be just something as simple as getting a return email from your lecturer at uni, right? That's a win. And if not, okay, what, that didn't work. What's another way? What's, you know, and so you've learnt from that. Okay, that didn't work. What other ways can I try? And often, yeah, you know, the power is in follow-up with people. If you're particularly wanting to connect for a mentor role, or, you know, you're wanting to get some information, you know, following up is a really good thing, because we're all really busy, and often that, you know, a couple of touch points are needed before you can get what you do need. And also, finally, yeah, do not be so narrow-minded and think that you're just going to be doing the same thing for the rest of your professional career. You won't, right? We've seen it even just in the last few years, the change from, I remember when we were looking at vaccinating and all these pharmacists were going, I'll never vaccinate, I don't want to do that. And now I would say most of the profession has that skill and can do it. So things will change. I think prescribing will become part of our scope of practice in the future. I think we'll have more opportunities to work in multidisciplinary teams, and so we need to demonstrate our value. But yeah, don't limit yourself. It's so important. There are so many opportunities and things that don't even exist yet that you will probably become an expert in. So just be open to it, take opportunities and keep learning.
I think that's such great advice, to follow your passion and seize every opportunity that you can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Obviously without getting overwhelmed.
Anna, it's been so inspiring speaking with you today, especially as a woman in this space doing the amazing things that you're doing. I think personally that's really motivating for me, and I'm sure lots of other students will resonate with that as well. So thank you for everything you've shared today, and thank you everyone else for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you want to follow Anna and see what she's up to next, you can find her on her LinkedIn. And if you haven't already, please visit www.jobsinpharmacy.com.au to elevate your pharmacy career.